The lights are on red. We're away.
GPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. Today is episode number 197. The date is October 2nd. My name is Jim Race, and I'm here with Jules Cisek. Good evening, Jules.
Hey, how's it going, Jim?
Excellent.
Missed you last week.
Yeah, sorry I wasn't there. A little bit of a late notification, but...
No worries.
Yep. But we're back, and we're ready to go.
And, man, we have some great racing last weekend.
There's all sorts of stuff going on, man. We'll try and keep this thing relatively succinct, but knowing how we go.
we'll talk about last weekend, and then we'll talk about next weekend, and that'll probably do it. Because there's so much going on both sides.
Absolutely. So where are we at? We had some listener emails this week.
Yeah, so let's start with this. Is actually, I got via Facebook from Fred Lindstrom, a fellow Ducatisti, and he says that he and Tony Pangs, found something on an R7 website that was interesting, and I'll just read what this is actually. So this is like Fred writing about what he saw on the R7 website. He said riding the R7 was a unique. A thrilling experience, but this bike was not built for ordinary roads or riders. Like its predecessor, the OW01, a similar exotic 750cc of 10 years earlier, the YZF R7 was designed to bring world superbike glory. The OW01 had won races, but never the title. For the YZF R7, only the delivery of Yamaha's first world superbike championship would suffice. The YZF R7 was designed for just one thing, and ultimately it failed to achieve it. After a disappointing learning year with the new bike in 1989, factory start Noriaki Haga came close to lifting the world superbike crown in 2000, but by the end of the season, that was marred by a positive drug test following his use of a slimming aid during preseason training. The Japanese ace finished second in the title race behind Honda's Colin Edwards. Yamaha then disbanded its world superbike team, and the R7's challenge was over. So I wanted to do that little bit from Fred and Tony. Thanks, guys. This is where Haga kind of came into the scene, in 1998, and immediately was very, very, very competitive. He came very close also to winning the championship in 2007. He basically just ran out of races. If he had two more rounds, I could very easily have seen him beating Toesland. So just wanted to give it a little bit of background because we're going to be talking a lot about Haga and Spies since the championship is back to back to the beginning. It's almost like we didn't have any racing.
Yeah, it's kind of a full circle thing. Yeah. The R7 was a neat bike, and bringing up the OW01, which was pretty much a crazy bike as far as even trying to ride it on the racetrack. Forget even trying to ride something like that on the street. But it is a bike that I kind of miss a bit. And the only people that are really doing sporting 750s right now, obviously, are Suzuki. And I still think that's a class that's worthy of having, maybe even a killer spec series or something like that. But we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, it was a very, very cool bike. Just a not a real bike at all. And then we got one from our friend Darren Carpenter, who's been on the show a whole bunch of times. Sent one in. He says, "I think when you guys talk about MotoGP, about World Superbike, you need to give Ben some more credit. I was also rooting for Haga in the beginning, but Spies' results are amazing." Arguably the best rookie season ever from anyone in World Superbike or MotoGP. He's gone to tracks this year that he has never been to before and has been at the top of the charts from first practice on. And he is on a new team. They don't have any data from the previous years to help set up the bike for him, and he is still fastest. The season isn't over, and Haga may still win the championship, but Spies has already shown he's a better rider than Haga. When considering the championship, don't forget the 2-3 DNFs Spies has had this year because of mistakes by his team. And you had a long back and forth conversation with him, which I just kind of listened in on. But
well, I'm not going to get too much into that because a lot of it was just kind of deteriorated into a little bit of a flame war. And Darren and I know each other, so we tend to, you know, not hold back. But the basic thing that I wanted to say was that first of all, I think that, you know, 6 months ago, the statement that we weren't giving Ben Spies enough credit may have been true, but I certainly have been won over, and I think that I am leaning towards him being a better writer than Haga in some ways, but you also have to give Haga credit for actually keeping this battle going, and... But the main issue I had with what Darren said is that is we can't blame these DNFs, even if the mechanical ones on teams alone. And I think that there's a separation of rider and team that's very unfair because I think that the rider has incredible input into the team technically. If they don't, they're not a very good developer rider, and they end up on satellite teams and, you know, whatever. But the guys that are on the factory teams and helping the bike get better, they have huge amounts of input and they make mistakes too. You know, for example, one of the things that Darren and I discussed was the fuel issue. When Spies ran out of fuel in race two in Monza, and you put enough fuel in the bike, just enough, because you don't want to put too much because you don't want to make it heavy. I think is there like a specific limit on in superbikes that I'm sure there is. There has to be, of course.
I don't know what the exact limit is, but well, you know, it was kind of Monza for as example was really weird, and I'm not positive we ever got the full story on that because you remember there was the accident in the first corner, and then everybody went back to the pits, and word was that they had refilled the tank. Whether they did that with cool fuel or hot fuel, who knows? But your point's very well taken. If the rider directs the team to set them up with a certain setup, be it a map setting or whatever, or overrides the bike in order to try and keep it at the top, if they have to ride more aggressively than they expected, you can run out of fuel. It's not always the team's fault.
Yeah, and you know, MotoGP bikes actually will readjust their fuel intake. Superbikes don't. You know, like
right.
MotoGP bikes is very extremely rare to run out of fuel. We did see that one with Nicky, obviously at Assen.
I think that was a brand new motor spec that they'd just gotten, so they hadn't quite gotten their.
Yeah, and it has happened, but it was definitely a shame, and I think that. You know, you could argue that every DNF is every mechanical DNF has some basically. Okay, sorry. The key here is that Ben Spies is part of his team. He's not this guy who rides and there's a team over there that screws him up. You know, they're a team. You know, and he knows that. He's the one who has never spoken out against his team and said, "Boy, they really fucked me up." You know. He's been very fair to his team, and I think the only DNF that he's had that where he clearly was not at fault, like 100% not at fault, was when Fabrizio took him out of Brno.
True, and he can't blame that on the team,
right? Right,
not his own team.
So I think that, let's talk about Imola, because I think Fabrizio, you know, paid him back a little bit there.
Yeah, he did.
Both the races were just amazing. Amazing edge of your seat. The second one, maybe not so much in the front, but till the end. But there was definitely some incredible stuff going on.
Let me stop you for just a moment, and let's just run down qualifying, because that actually kind of led to some of the things that we saw.
Good point.
I'll just give you the top eight, the people that made it into Super Bowl III, because that is kind of the key here. And just keep in your mind the ones that didn't make it out of that group. On pole, Fabrizio. Second was Spies. Third, Ray. Fourth, Haga. Fifth, the ever well qualifying Jakob Smerts. Sixth was Max Biaggi. Seventh was Shaky Byrne, so good for him. And the big surprise, I suppose, but in the end, who really was surprised was Marco Simoncelli.
That's right, that's right. And, you know, we should say that Fabrizio beat Spies, like, in the last moments and by a very, very, very small margin.
Absolutely. Even after the checker had been thrown, he was on, in fact, there was, I think he hit, the checker was probably thrown about 4 seconds after he went back. And, in fact, the announcers, who Eurosport wasn't doing too well this weekend, but they weren't even aware that he was actually still on a full lap or on a fast lap until basically he came around the last corner, and it shocked everybody. And Ben had been sitting down for like 3 or 4 minutes. I think he had it locked. So yeah, the Super Bowl was awesome too. So anyway, yeah, the races.
Yeah, so Ben did not have a good start at all. He was all over the place, whereas the Ducatis just really had a beautiful start because they definitely have that traction control that they were talking about bringing to Imola, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But the surprise, I think, start was Biaggi. Biaggi had an amazing start. He's not really known for great starts, although he's been getting better round by round because I think he really realized that, like, dicing with some of these guys in the back, there's some wild riders in there. We'll talk about that as well.
Well, not only that, but while the Aprilia has a lot of frontline speed, it tends to have a bit of a corner speed issue and actually some problems going in on the brakes, so he can't always pass on the brakes. So he's got to stay real close, and you don't want to end up stuck behind somebody back in 4th, 5th, 8th, 10th and not be able to get your way back to the front. So, yeah, he got a brilliant start, and you know, on top of that, he's an Italian in Italy. And all the Italians in Italy were going nuts. So,
yeah. And then we had a fantastic race. Biaggi led for quite a few laps. Was it Fabrizio that caught him first?
I believe it was.
Fabrizio caught him first. Then Biaggi regained the lead. And then Haga passed Fabrizio and went off after Biaggi, whereas Fabrizio kind of faded for a little while and didn't really recover until towards the end.
Yeah, and the only time that Spies was there in fourth, basically during the whole race, and the only time that he could actually get up there to challenge was when the three started dicing.
Right.
And from what I understand, they had an electronics problem. He, in fact, it was kind of funny. He tweeted later, and he was like, I think I just rode a 600 for 21 laps. So he didn't have full power and really wasn't able to challenge, but when they all started slowing each other down, he'd come up to the back of them. So he really never had a shot to get up there and really work for a podium position.
Right, and actually, even before he was in fourth, he was actually in fifth, and we should talk about everybody's favorite rider of the weekend, Jonathan Rea.
What a smooth race he rode.
He almost took out Haga again. I think Haga has like a sixth sense. I think all races have a sixth sense because they, you know, they could see what a rider is doing, and then Haga just touched the brakes. It was just after the start and finish chicane.
Yeah, I think it might have been like 3 or 4 corners. I don't remember the names of the corners, but it was a hard right, and Rea was relatively close to the front guys and looked like he was going to try and make a pass up on whoever was third up the inside. And
yeah, just, Fabrizio.
And got off into the dirty stuff and essentially had no chance to break, ran it straight through while these guys are completely cranked over. And somehow, some way, I'm going to say Haga missed him. He didn't miss Haga.
yeah, definitely. I mean, it was inches at that speed. It was amazing. And there's, we're talking about perpendicular.
Absolutely. You know. It would have been a total T-bone with both of them in an extremely vulnerable position. And frankly, if it had happened, it would have significantly altered the world championship standings.
And oh, yeah.
It could have been worse, yeah.
Yep.
And he continued his antics in race two, which I think got us even a little bit more peed.
But the rest of the race was, again, it's, if you get a chance to watch it, absolutely worth watching from start to finish. Just fantastic. I mean, I had to pause it and take a breath because I realized I was just holding it for so long. And, you know, in the end, the finish was fantastic. Haga kind of pulled away, and he was clearly going to win. But Biaggi, who had fallen off the pace, actually caught up to Fabrizio and just stole second position on the last corner. It was just very, 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 you know, the Roman versus the Roman. You know, he was not going to let Fabrizio get away with it, and it was brilliant, brilliant finish.
It really was. And those of you that are, you know, if you don't have it on your cable or whatever, you can watch it now on worldsbk.com because their Superbike TV stuff is working. It should work for you no matter what country you're in. And they do have the nice thing about it is they have the full race, including all of the pre-race stuff, sans commercials. So if you've got no other venue, it is a good way to watch it online. Cool. And it's free.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. I keep forgetting about that. Okay, and race two, similar kind of start, except that Haga was in front.
Yeah, I found race two a little bit more fascinating, maybe for just the diversity and scrambling that was going on in the field. I should mention, because I was kind of slagging on Jakob about that, his qualification effort. He did finish eighth in race one, so good for him. But race two was fun. Spies had about the same crap start, but seemed to be running pretty well, but simply didn't have the overall pace of the rest of the Italian bikes. It just wasn't there. And Jonathan Rea also, well, he didn't nearly take anybody out. I believe he had a total of three off-track excursions trying to make passes during this race. And so, yeah, he's kind of on our list right now. Some immature riding.
Which is surprising because he's been pretty solid. Although at Nürburgring, he was all over the place too.
True.
He has a very loose style of riding, and I think he surprises himself sometimes. Like he doesn't have he's one of those riders that every lap is different. Whereas you look at like a guy like Biaggi, like he can be inch perfect. The only time that Biaggi ever strays off his line is when he needs to pass or is getting passed.
Right. And all credit to Hansbury, because the bike looked fast as hell.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And so, and I mean, fast enough to be a podium machine. But he kept having to make up for mistakes that he was making, and it almost seemed like he was way overcompensating, trying to make passes where there simply wasn't space, or just heading into corners like so fast that there's no way you're going to make the apex, and you're definitely going to run wide, or worse, and go off in the gravel trap. So, the big news of the race was the epic battle between temporary teammates, which was Max Biaggi and Marco Simoncelli.
Right, which ended in complete tears, but Simoncelli put quite the move on Biaggi in the start-finish chicane.
I like the way you put that, quite the move.
Quite the move, and forced Biaggi off the racing line. And unfortunately for Spies, he was right behind those guys, and he had nowhere to go. He could not break, so he actually had to go off the track completely.
Which was impressive if you think about it, because that could have doubly ended in tears.
Yeah, and just the quickness of Spies thinking, to evaluate all the things he could have tried, because he could have tried to avoid Biaggi on the inside, but there was a chance of Biaggi coming back on the track. Biaggi is kind of known for not really caring about returning to the track. He was seeing red at that point, especially for being passed by Simoncelli like that.
He's seeing red, white, and green.
Yeah, and Simoncelli actually even said that it was kind of a mistake. He had to do what he did to avoid actually crashing into Biaggi. So it was basically like,
that's what I'd say too.
Yeah, yeah.
all in all, that particular pass, while it may not have been the prettiest thing, and certainly didn't benefit either Biaggi or or Spies, was kind of the storybook of the weekend, because you got a guy that comes in, it's only had a couple of days on the bike at Mugello testing, comes out, qualifies really well, gets into Super Bowl 3, has a bit of a tough time in race one, but that was...
Well, he was going fast, but then he just fell, you know.
Well, that would be a tough time. the charge, or not the charge, but the march, if you will, up through the field to get where he got to, you know, passing Spies, passing Biaggi. And it was just like you were waiting and it was inevitable. And then as soon as he was past Biaggi, it seemed like he faded a little bit, and then he started to come back.
Right.
And you were really waiting for just the knockdown drag out, because, you know, Max, and Max does not want to be passed by some 250 world champion upstart. You know, it's not like they don't have a little bit in common. It was a great way to end the race, and they were still close. You know, it was just a little bit over a second, or a little bit under a second.
Biaggi was struggling. Something was different about the bike and race. I actually haven't heard anything. He hasn't said anything about it.
I haven't heard much about it either, but he was strong, and it seemed like he faded when he got past, and then he started to pick it back up again, and I was impressed by that, but I was also kind of bummed that they weren't both battling there right at the end.
Right, right.
But otherwise, it was a great weekend to watch.
Well, hang on. I think the most important thing that happened there was Haga looked comfortably in the lead, and Fabrizio looked like he was defending him.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Fabrizio caught Haga and passed him and ended up winning by quite a bit, large margin. And
Tardozzi looked really happy about it.
Yeah. just in case you can't tell, Jim is being sarcastic, because Tardozzi was shaking his head on the start and finish line. He's got to be happy that his guys finished 1 and 2, but for the championship, that's 5 points. That's a huge. Because right now, at the end of the two races, Spies is back only 3 points from Haga, which is less than a race win, or less than it than the difference between second and third.
Right.
Even.
Yep. It's tightened things back up again. Well, you know, they were still tight anyway. It was 18 points after the last races, but it certainly
is... 18 and 3 is a big difference.
Well, very true. Very true. Some people talk about team orders. Are they there? Are they not? You know, you've got Fabrizio in front of an Italian crowd and an Italian bike. He wants to win.
Let me tell you, I do not blame Fabrizio.
I don't
for
either.
That. I mean, this is his track. You know, he was on pole. He did everything right in this race, both races.
I think he has surprised everybody this year. I think a lot of people thought he kind of gotten gifted his seat a little bit in a way, and he struggled at the beginning of the season. And to be frank, the guy always looks like he's a little bit out of control when he's racing. Mm-hmm. And he certainly doesn't have the smoothness of a lot of the guys that have been around for a long time, but he's getting the job done. So, hey, maybe something will happen as we get down closer, but for right now, I'd rather watch a solid hardcore race.
Yep. Agreed. The way he won at that point, a couple laps from the end, even if they had hung a board out saying, slow down and let him pass, it would have been so obvious that I think fans would have been very, very upset at that point.
Exactly. I'm pretty stoked. And I think that it bodes well for the rest of the season, and I think we're going to continue to have fun and watch this thing go on. And I'll take close over somebody stretching out any day. If it bounces back and forth between,
just like a race, you don't want to see a race won by 10 seconds. You want to see it won by 0.5. You know,
I sent you that really oddball stats thing the other day, which is let me see. So if Fabrizio wins all four races, both Haga and Spies get second and two and DNF two, in the end, the result will be Haga, Fabrizio, Spies. And it occurred to me, that's an ideal position for Ducati to be in. Will it happen? I guess it could. Probably not, because the odds of that exact thing are happening are wildly
low. But yeah, it is interesting, definitely.
So we'll see. We'll see. And you know, the superbike or super sport races were pretty good. Well, they had a real surprise in store for us, and I think that was the shocking thing. Crutchlow came out and basically dominated again, which is getting pretty scary. But he, you know, he lately he's also been having issues in races, I mean, kind of silly ones. But this thing went off. He jumped out in front. He was running really well. And then Lascores blew his engine about 9 laps in and oiled down the track something fierce, and they had to kill the thing. And it actually shut down for, I think, almost 45 minutes. They came back, re-ran it with about 9 laps left. A 9-lap sprint is a little crazy, and especially when the guys can all throw, you know, softs on. He came out. Crutchlow came out, was running really well. Laverty was a bit back, dicing up with Safalogu and Lascores, and Crutchlow crashed out of the lead again. And, you know, he had, I think it was 28 points after after his last crash. And then Eugene got second in this race, and so all of a sudden he's within 8 and solidly back in the standings. And there's, you know, only, what, 2 races left. Probably the biggest thing in that race was yet another replacement rider who came in fourth just off the box, which was Chaz Davies, riding on the B1 Triumph 675. He beat his teammate, McCoy, and got a fourth place.
That was awesome. Yeah, and McCoy's, this is his second year on the bike.
Yeah. Well, and clearly, you know, McCoy's got a few miles under his belt. And it was really funny because our friends, the announcers over there, again, the whole race when he's running fourth, when Davies is running fourth, they're all talking about him like he's McCoy. And it wasn't until after the race when they actually started walking through the results, they're like, oh, that was Chaz Davies.
So what's the point difference there?
You're looking at, let me run down the standings.
There's 5 points?
No, 2.
Two points. Yeah. So both series are really, really coming down to the wire for the last 2 rounds. Just fantastic. Okay, so let's go to MotoGP. That's what this show is about. There was actually a comment. I don't know where I read this. Where some listener was complaining that we're talking too much about World Superbikes and he wants more MotoGP. Well, we talk about MotoGP a lot more on this show. We just happen to be having a fantastic season. And if you're not watching World Superbikes, you're really missing out, buddy. So there.
Well, I mean, and part of it is, too, is that we've had some very unusual breaks this year where we don't have, you know, the normal double weekends, or all we've got is World Superbikes or MotoGP for a bit. So listen to both, take our advice, and watch some of the races. I think you'll really enjoy it, regardless of which series you enjoy the best.
All right, so on to Estoril.
Yes.
We will start with a listener email from listener Alan Clarkson Dodd, who's local here in Bay Area. And he writes, I'm sure other folks have pointed this out, but I was thinking the following about Stoner's return. We have to be talking about, of course, Stoner's return.
Sure.
He hates the press. It puts pressure on him. I wonder what will happen when they're beating on his door, asking how he feels every minute of the weekend. Supo sounds like he's put the hard word on him, possibly demanding that he turn up, which is fair enough if reports are true that he just told the guy that he was off for a few races. So it will be really interesting to see how he handles the pressure, especially for the press, whether he does well or not. And this basically is a great summary of all the crap that's been going on because, first of all, you know, the whole Marlboro thing, like the president of racing sponsorship, whatever, at Marlboro was asking for Stoner to apologize for leaving. There was all these rumors about how he left that he basically, you know, just disappeared and then called him from Australia and said, listen, I'm going to be gone for a little while. Whereas their press release says, you know, that Stoner left and it was very difficult to accept the advice the doctors were giving him to stop racing. So that's, you know, obviously PR BS. And you know, and then the shopping for Llorente, the shopping for Pedrosa, you know, the rumors with Rossi. I mean, Ducati was the whole thing was just spin job. And now, and you know, and here's Stoner. So like, I'm really feeling bad for this guy because Stoner hates the press, right? He hates the pressure. I think he hates the pressure of having to do this. Like, you know, a little song and dance for them.
Anything besides racing.
Yeah, anything besides racing. And Jesus Christ, I go to MotoGP.com and they have a freaking, you know, like a trailer. You know, like a movie trailer. The only thing that's missing is like Carmina Burana playing, you know. like, dun-dun, you know, he was, you know, the 2007 world champion. Dun-dun. Mystery illness. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, and everywhere you go, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know,
I can almost guarantee you that if we watch the BBC coverage from this weekend, they're going to have like an epic one of those, like leading in, because they're real good at doing those kind of
right.
And in fact, I'll probably pick it up this weekend and take a look. It's been a media frenzy, and I think you saw what I replied to Alan about, which I wouldn't be surprised if they did. Is I, you know, hide him away, give him, you know, a lot like what they did with Hopkins when he came into Stiggy in World Superbike, is just hide him away, sequester him, keep the press away from him, let him get back into the element.
Yeah, but Hopper wasn't a championship front runner.
Well, I know, but
you know. There's no way that they can keep the press away from Stoner. They just can't.
Well, they can a little bit.
They can a little bit, but the press is going to demand, Dorna's going to demand that the press is allowed to talk to Stoner.
Well, I guess one thing that we'll find out real quickly tomorrow, or you know, probably actually not in a few too many hours, is if he is at the opening press conference.
Right.
That will be kind of an indicator as to what his availability and status will be for the weekend. We know he's there. He's already been seen, heard from in the paddock. So, you know, that's obviously a positive step, right?
Yeah. There's no doubt that he's going to be at,
right,
at Estoril, and he's going to race. We'll see how he does. I have a feeling that he's going to do just fine.
I think he'll do fine too.
Because it's just like those times when he, you know, when he's not feeling the greatest. I mean, he obviously was not feeling the greatest and still was finishing third, or the times when he can go out, you know, do a couple of laps and set the fastest time and just go back to the garage and go to sleep, you know?
Yeah, I think the funnest thing to watch will be able to see if he can continue to do what he does in free practices and qualifying, in that, you know, he can just go out and slam one down and go back and have a banana.
Right.
That will be, and I doubt that. I think he's going to have to work for it, and you know, that's kind of what we all want anyway. It'll be an interesting weekend. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things that are kind of ironing out too, amongst the paddock. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. So I was looking at the results from last year. You know, this was Lorenzo's first win last year, and he did that incredibly audacious pass on Valentino Rossi. I think that's when that was a race where I gained tremendous respect for Lorenzo. He was already on his third pole position by that point in a row as a rookie, and it was just the way that he passed Rossi. There was just no, I don't want to say deference, because no racer will have deference to another racer,
right?
But it was just, you know, he really just total 100% confidence. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that, you know, it's that famous chicane pass. It's very difficult to pull off, but when you can pull off, you know, it really lets you get a heads up. And after that, he was uncatchable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that race last year was actually a lot of fun. And reminding me that, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that was actually incredible.
I mean, if you look at the history of this racetrack, we've had some fantastic racing here.
Absolutely.
Year after year, we had, you know, 2006. I mean, one of the most incredible finishes ever, with Tony Elias winning the race, just barely beating Rossi, and Kenny Roberts Jr. almost almost winning that one. He had that little incident with, oh, I'm done. Oh, wait, I'm not done.
Right.
And then 2007 was a good race. 2008 for Stoner wasn't very good, but that was because of, I mean, it wasn't the only reason, but he had that little issue with the cameras falling off his bike.
Right.
And he
right.
was, you know, playing cameraman and putting the camera back on the bike at 200 miles an hour.
You know, I actually noticed, I won't back into that, but I actually noticed at the end of race two, when Simoncelli did well at World Superbike, that there was a camera hanging off his bike too. Just a little data point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess he just didn't care.
Probably not. I don't think it seemed to matter.
Anyway, it's a very interesting racetrack. One of the slower corner, well, the slowest corner of the entire year. And that uphill chicane is just unbelievably cool. Unbelievably cool.
Yeah, it should be a really fun weekend. And I think there's going to be an awful lot of drama that we're not totally prepared for. And in fact, it's going to be fun seeing what Marco or Simoncelli can do to come back and get back in. And, you know, there is also the news that Cali has re-signed with Pramac this week. So things are solidifying up over there. So what does that leave? One seat left at this point?
Well, there's the Pramac seat. And then there's that FB Corsa, which may or may not happen.
Right. Right. That's an interesting...
Well, so wait, hang on a second. Ben Spies has not confirmed yet that he's going to MotoGP next year.
Well, he's the only one that hasn't.
Yeah. I thought his mom has also said no.
Which of course you would. I think they're leaving all their options open, but it seems like it's a pretty open secret that he's already going.
Well, so what's your opinion on that? Because I think that I think he should go to MotoGP regardless of whether he wins the Superbikes or not.
I agree. As much as I'd like to see him, you know, stay there, I'd like to see him get into the MotoGP paddock and onto those tracks as quickly as possible to start building up. He had an interesting interview that I think we linked to last week with Jonathan Green, where he was talking about you know, not having an issue with coming in on a satellite bike and taking some time to learn. And he doesn't have to win all the time, but what he wants to do is continue to challenge himself. And I respect that a great deal. And I think that's the path for him if that's where he wants to go and he has the opportunity. And, you know, as an American, I think it'd be pretty badass to have an all-Texas team. I think that'd be pretty cool. And I think he'd partner well with Colin. So go for it. Bring him over to Tech 3. There's word that at that point, if that does happen, that Toslin may go to Factory Yamaha, who is going to be around next year because Gerald Gatta has re-signed with them.
Yay.
And with Crutchlow moving up from World Supersport up to, so that'd be an interesting pairing as well. You'd have a couple of Englishmen over there and a couple of Americans on Tech 3.
Yeah, yeah. What else we got? We got Moto 2 is going to have a team that might sound familiar.
Yeah, that's. I think we've heard about that for a bit, but
I think it's now official.
Supposed to definitely be on. I really can't wait to see the full list of teams that have signed up. But there are a bunch. But yeah, Team Roberts is supposed to be back. And then the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting about Moto 2, and again, we're building up to our off-season Moto 2 thing. We're getting a lot of information ready. But those teams, because it's a brand new series, are not going to be, well, there's a couple of things. They're not going to be affected by the super restrictive, and even more so than last season, 2009-2010 winter test regs for the regulations for the GP teams. But then on top of that, I believe I heard today that we expected to see the Honda spec engine at the end of November, and now I hear it's not going to be out until March.
That's right. Yeah, I heard the same thing. They're going to have the engine available in November. Right now, they already have available a block.
Right.
That I think weighs about the weight of the engine.
Yeah, woo!
In November, they're going to have something that actually runs. And in March, you're going to... But only in March will they have the full spec motor with all the power, which is actually crazy if you think about it, because the first round next year is in April.
Right, and you have to tune your chassis to the motor.
Yeah, totally.
Power that it produces, and you know everything you do with the limited electronics that you're going to have on the bike. So, you know, they'll get it together. And again, if they're not going to be restrictive over that winter test time, and they can get the engine in time and get some time on the track, although you know that's not cheap. Regardless, some guys are going to be scrambling, especially the teams with not a lot of money. It'll make for an interesting beginning of the season. You know, those with a lot more resources are probably going to, you know, well, I guess this always happens. They'll have a bit of an upper hand. And of course, those teams that have already started now to get their act together are going to be in good shape. So should be fun. Should be fun. I continue to get more excited.
World Superbike news.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of it. Of course, we've got MagniCore coming up this weekend, as we talked about. Last year, pretty straightforward. Well, and this is a really good sign for one Noriyuki Haga. Why is that remarkable? Well, he's never done well at the track we ran at last weekend. And, you know, it's his first win there ever at Imola. And he's, you know, you got to think that he's on a roll after taking the win this weekend. So, it should be pretty fun. Last year was in Superbike was Haga Nieto and Bayless in race one, and Bayless, Haga, and Courser in race two. I'm sorry. Yeah, he didn't win both of them, but he certainly got a win.
Right.
So it should be fun. And like I said, I'm gonna have to rewatch it from last year and see what I got.
Speaking of this, like I have to say that I kind of lost faith that Haga had a chance. We talked about this, you know, 2 weeks ago. That
you unbeliever, you.
Yeah, I know. I saw him hang his head after that race one, and then in race two he crashed. I was just like, oh man, he's finished. This was the round that he was supposed to win. But the way he rode at Imola,
yeah,
you know, he's Nitro Nori, you know.
Yeah. So it's racing, right? And everybody says this all the time. You never know what's going to happen until it happens. But this is going to be fun because we're going to a track that we know Haga does well at. It's a track that Spies has never tested at. So he's got no experience, unlike he did at Imola, where he'd done some testing.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay. let me just throw out real quickly the rest of the World Superbike news, because it's kind of cool stuff. Ian Kammerer, the newly crowned BSB champ, is going to take the ride that Simoncelli just did really well at, covering and pairing up with Max Biaggi. So Biaggi's got to be fuming a little bit. You know, he's got rotating teammates here. And then Tomata is out after a really nasty crash, and we'll link to that that he had in race one. He got basically blindsided by a wild card. And so he's going to be out. And Sheridan Marais, who ran in Kyalami and did a great job and has been doing some Donington or some BSB rounds, South African Superbike champ, will be out. And I think he'll be real strong. So it'd be nice to see some new faces in there. And yeah, MagniCore should be fun.
Wasn't Marais' finish one of the best Kawasaki finishes of all year? Of the whole year?
It was. And yeah.
I mean, yeah, obviously it was local track knowledge, but still, I mean, watching him ride he was definitely riding that Kawasaki like nobody else was riding the Kawasaki, because he was riding it sideways.
Yeah, the guy's a little fire plug. He's like, you look at him off the bike, he looks like he's about 5'7" and about, 160 pounds and all muscle. And he proved really well in Donington after a really scary looking crash that he's very crash worthy, because he just popped up from that and he was back on the bike for the next race. So what else is good? I think that's about it, isn't it?
That is it.
We jammed through that.
We had a couple of weeks without nothing, and now it's all coming. For the last few months now, we're going to have a lot of racing. Enjoy this weekend. I'm not getting any sleep.
I think I'm turning into like a zombie. I can't remember last time I had a real good night's sleep. Good to talk to you, Jules, and looking forward to the weekend's races, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, man. Have a good night. Ciao.
Bye.
All right. Well, as soon as we finished recording the show, which we do those calls on Wednesday night, next morning, read the news that Ben Spies has decided it's official. He's going to MotoGP in 2010, whether or not he wins the World Superbike Championship. So he will be riding alongside with Colin Edwards. So we're going to have the two Texans, Tex-Trois. Meanwhile, James Toseland and Cal Crutchlow are going to be riding for the World Superbike Factory Team Yamaha Stell Regatta. So there's a little swaparoo going on there between Ben and James, as we expected, but now it's official. And in MotoGP at Estoril, Casey Stoner's there. Looks cool, looks chill, looks good to go. We'll see how he does later today during the free practice. So we're looking forward to a very exciting race, very exciting races, actually, both at World Superbikes and in MotoGP. Once again, take care. If you're going to do any riding, keep the shiny side up and your knee down. Take care. Ciao.